The Midweek Drive Team, four words which signify quality and all that's best in audio entertainment.
Yes, it's time for another edition of Business Matters on Siren Radio. And we're delighted today to welcome somebody who is currently undertaking her PhD, but she's also the founder of a phenomenally wonderful organization called Beyond Money. So we say a hearty welcome to Maureen O'Callaghan. How are you, Maureen?
I'm well, thank you, Alex. And really happy to be here and talking to you.
Well, it's great to connect with your good self. And of course, in terms of just a descriptor, I mean, I've literally just scratched the surface there in terms of the key things that you're involved with. So just share with us, what is Beyond Money? What is it in terms of, as a focus? How did you actually develop it? And also, again, it's within the service scenario. How is this also feeding into your work as an entrepreneur?
Right. OK, you may have to remind me of some of those questions. So the registered name of the company is Beyond Money Education and Training, community interest company. And I suppose that says it all, really. It's a community interest company that was set up primarily to help business owners to learn about how they can combine making a profit with also helping other people, society, and the planet, that actually you don't have to give up one or the other, that they are compatible. In fact, they actually support one another. It falls out of my PhD research. I'm now up to embark on my kind of fourth year, I think it is, of my PhD. And I was looking into entrepreneurship and about being pro-social. And it was from there that I recognized there is the need to add something to the current offer in terms of entrepreneur education. That's not to say there isn't excellent work being done in that area, but we're in different times now. You know, the 21st century is certainly presenting lots and lots of challenges for business owners. And what I wanted was some materials that could help them engage with these agendas in ways that were relevant and accessible. So that, in a nutshell, is Beyond Money. Have I answered all of those questions?
Perfectly. And it's opened up, as all the best answers do, a whole avenue of exploration, which we're going to hopefully spend the next few moments effectively addressing. Because the entrepreneur as a concept, I'm of the generation that clearly had to be faced with the notion of, Well, Richard Branson didn't go to university, and Bill Gates dropped out of university, and of course, Steve Jobs also went from that point of view. These things can make you can't actually teach being an entrepreneur. Now, clearly, what you've been saying, Maureen, completely contradicts that because there is a mindset, a skill set that actually says yes, entrepreneurs can be created. It's nature versus nurture, really, is what I'm saying. How do we actually address that within the notion of people who might be listening to this saying, yeah, fine, I'm an entrepreneur, I do this, etc. We even hear kidpreneurs these days, Generation Alpha, how they're making various business decisions whilst they're in the year 9, year 10, year 11, etc. Any thoughts on the way that, in a sense, people perceive the sense of the entrepreneur?
Oh gosh, Alex, that takes me right back to the initial stages of my research, which inevitably was looking at the literature and what came around, very loudly and clearly. There isn't a consensus on what's meant by this term. And in actual fact, the more you got talking to people, I think there was, well, in my case, the interviews I had with people who were either entrepreneurs themselves or who supported entrepreneurs, there was very diverse views. Now, me, I see entrepreneurship as a practice, not as a job title. And I think there are lots of concepts that are involved in the practice of entrepreneurship. One is obviously creating and managing a business for profit. But there's also other things about being opportunistic. Most of the people that I spoke to, that was one of their number one character traits, the fact that they could see an opportunity and go with it. I think they also, I must say that some of the early stages of my research was looking at the character traits of entrepreneurs. They're risk takers, definitely. And I think they tend to be people who are results orientated and will persevere until they achieve those results. And there are people who sort of, I don't know, tend not to shy away from challenges. Now, I would define myself as an entrepreneur. I've been that way throughout my career, I suppose. My number one character strength is bravery. And I think that more than anything else, it's the courage to move forward and to have a belief in what you're doing. But you're absolutely right. All the Elon Musks and the Richard Bransons present themselves in a particular way. And I think a lot of people are put off by thinking of themselves as an entrepreneur.
Let's talk a little bit about, one has to say, just referring back to that, it's interesting that all the aforementioned are white male individuals, and maybe we need to actually broaden the diversity approach there. I'm not sure whether Anita Roddick has kind of had a different sort of approach to the whole thing, or indeed Shirley Conran or other sort of folk that probably in the sort of way that things are developing would have actually identified from that perspective. But we are, as you rightly said, Maureen, in the 21st century. We are dealing with things such as sustainability, the importance of that. We're also dealing very much with companies in what I define with the students as corporate social responsibility, actually having credentials which do demonstrate that you're doing good for the community that you're working within and are seen to be doing good. Is that something that, with respect to Beyond Money, that you're also committed to ensuring that, in terms of the ethical issues, and I realize that's a whole can of fish from that point of view, is that something which is very important to yourself, or is it a case of, well, I acknowledge it's there, but it's not necessarily my number one priority?
What was very interesting when you look at the whole area of commercialization and things like that, and what influences someone to go down that route, role models have a key role. And I would feel very uncomfortable about talking to people if I about being pro-social if I didn't walk my talk. So I Ted have stopped printing out research papers. I struggle to read research papers off of a screen, but I know that if I print them out, I'm damaging the environment. It's the carbon footprint. So I've stopped doing that. I recycle, I reuse, all of those things. I bank ethically, and I also try to do things to help other people. So I know somebody who is looking to work with the university, and I'm fi found a way to help him by introducing him to people. Little things like that. It doesn't have to be major. I also do voluntary work for an organization that works with vulnerable women and girls. So one of the things I've been working on is for women leaving prison, finding employment can be a struggle. And some of them were quite interested in exploring how they might set up in business as a way of earning money.
A legal
Now,
business, probably.
yes, legal business. Well, I actually didn't ask, funny enough, but there.
Just a thought, really.
That I do voluntarily. I help them with their setting up their child and vulnerable adult protection because that was part of my background and I have those skills. So I don't have a lot of resources. I'm retired and setting up, and I'm self-funding my PhD. But I am able to give my time to help other people. So that does that answer your question, Alex?
I think it does, because it addresses the importance of how, in a sense, you see yourself, and also how that is developed within the grounds of some of the constraints that we actually work within. Now, business in general can often be said to be not just about people, but about confidence. Now, allowing for those two factors, confidence and people, and I'm referring to people in the sense of networking. You've just very eloquently outlined how you were able to introduce people to the University of Lincoln via networking interactions and so on. Do you feel as though we're getting better at that in the social media age? Or is it something that in some ways maybe we still need to work on, that actually sometimes actually a face-to-face contact, a personal phone call can be better than maybe a LinkedIn or WhatsApp connection?
That's an interesting question. If I may, I'll share with you a little anecdote, Alex. My career before I set up in business was in two of the big aid agencies. One was Save the Children Fund, one was the Red Cross. So I represented them globally and had, I guess I felt I had the backing of these large organizations behind me. And when I set up in business on my own, it was me. And I remember vividly going to the door of two networking meetings and then walking away because I was too scared to walk in. It's a huge thing for somebody. And I happen to think sometimes for women it's a little bit harder, and certainly was in those days because business area and business networking was a very much male-dominated domain. But I think it's knowing yourself, having a high level of self-awareness, and being able to find the ways of reaching out and connecting with people that suits you better, and the circumstances. I studied my PhD at the time of COVID, so I didn't have an option but to go down the kind of social media route and the online networking, and that has its place. And I'm increasingly feeling more confident in that place. And the times I get to meet people face to face are now very special, and things that I probably take more care in preparing for and following up and all of those things, because for somebody now to meet you face to face, you realize they're making quite an effort rather than just saying, oh, I'll talk to you on Zoom or Teams or whatever. But I think, yeah, it's not something I'm confident in, you know. I've done lots of courses on how to be more confident networking. I don't know. I
In a
don't know.
sense, Maureen, we learn by doing. And I think what
Yeah.
we're doing today is further experience, which can further enhance and develop the image and the way in which we actually deal with other experiences. Let's continue with the.
Can I just add one thing, Alex? Is I learned, and I learned this through my time at university, the most important thing in networking is to find your tribe. And I think I found academia quite alien for a long time. I was in the School of Psychology for most of the time. And I think it's something about if you meet people who share your values, who understand what you're talking about, maybe who want to achieve what you do, it makes it so much easier. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, I
Yes,
cut across
no,
there.
it's a phrase that I've heard coined many a time, find your tribe. Not that we're advocating tribalism, of course. You still have to keep those networks between tribes going, otherwise you can have
Absolutely.
all sorts
Yeah.
of other challenges. But let's return back to confidence, and let's look at the broader sense of confidence insofar as, you know, we're well aware that presently the government effectively saying inflation's come down, the Bank of England saying it's our fault, it's your fault. Who knows? There are all sorts of narratives going around that which we see. Do you feel as though Britain at present in the post-Brexit, post-pandemic, high-tech era that we're actually in, the challenges of artificial intelligence, do you feel that actually the confidence is there? Or are we basically in a period of uncertainty that actually not just higher education, but all institutions and certainly all businesses, whilst there are huge opportunities potentially out there, there's also an awful lot of concern and maybe lack of confidence in terms of how we go on. Simply because, as we said, in the pandemic, it was fantastic in terms of if you'd had shares in Zoom, happy days. If you'd actually had experience of Microsoft Teams and worked through that, we all went through as academics, as scholars, as business people, ways of having to pivot, I think was the popular phrase. We had to pivot, we had to be resilient, we had to adapt, and so on. Now we obviously have a mixture of both. We're carrying out this interview via Zoom as opposed to inviting you into the studio, which again, we'd like to see you sometime face to face from that point of view. But in terms of the way that that operates, do you feel if we're using the Maureen O'Callaghan finger in the air litmus test, is there greater confidence now? Are we getting more confident? Or is it a case of there's still a lot of uncertainty out there?
I think there's definitely uncertainty out there. There's anxiety. There's levels of stress. There's also, I believe, a tendency for people to be more open since COVID about these challenges, and to seek help, from other people. To be open and say I'm struggling. Most of the conversations I have with business owners, that they'll talk about the struggles really openly. There doesn't seem to be a front, if you know what I mean. Whether,
Okay.
but there, this is a difficult time to
I mean, if,
for
then
all of
again,
us.
arguably, there have always been challenging times. However, we're currently in an era where let's throw in those two letters which have become so popular recently, A and I, artificial intelligence. And clearly, we have love-ins from the point of view of Elon Musk, as aforementioned, and Rishi Sunak. And the notion of where we're going for this, the genie coming out of the bottle, etc. Augmented intelligence is another variation that's been used with respect to that. Is that something which, again, you know, it's yet another stage in terms of how the technology is developing, how in essence there are many cases of very successful online businesses who have effectively managed to expand successfully from what would have been very small, almost cottage industries to, you know, large scale operations and so on. Is that something where we can seize the initiative, or is it a case of, Ultimately, beyond money, yes, I do have a chat GPT all set and ready to answer any questions that come through.
I'm not very technical when it with IT and things like that, but I attended a webinar last week where somebody talked about AI and talked about AI in a way that it was a tool that could be used, not to replace you, but one that would harness your performance. And I was convinced by it. I think there is a place for AI in business. I think it frees up the business owner to focus on the things that only a human being can do. And I'm looking forward to incorporating it into Beyond Money in ways that are appropriate.
And there certainly do seem to be regularly within business more and more bureaucratic tasks, which in many cases, a bit like education, you think surely this could be easily handled by a suitable program, algorithm, or system that could effectively deal with this.
Yes, I think you're right. And I think for me, it's not being aware and realizing that I need to be far more open-minded about AI. But the importance of talking to people who know what they're talking about.
Maureen, as we know, you're a PhD student in the business school. You're an entrepreneur. You worked for some global charity systems. You've packed a huge amount into your life experience so far. How do you relax?
Okay, so lots of things. I'm blessed with having great children and some amazing grandchildren that I have the joy of being able to spend time with. I enjoy gardening, I enjoy walking, I enjoy holidays, and I meditate as well. That's a kind of conscious effort to quiet my mind, which usually helps me to relax somewhat. I read. I'm a part-time student at the university, so I have time for myself, and for me that's really important.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
particularly at this sort of stage in my life, I sort of recognize that I need to manage the energy levels. So yeah.
And what advice would you have for, shall we say, the 16-year-old version of yourself, the 16-year-old Maureen O'Callaghan, who might be, through the mists of quantum magic and Einstein, Rosen bridges, etc., listening to this particular sequence? What words would you actually have for your 16-year-old self?
Well, the 16-year-old Maureen O'Callaghan had just been thrown out of school. She'd been expelled. And
So a rebel then,
if I,
obviously.
so I would have expelled her as well. I was a horrendous teenager. I think what I would say is develop a love of learning. So that has been the joy, I think, more than anything else in my life, the opportunity to learn and with that learning to change perspective and to engage with life. And learning requires an open-mindedness. Being open-minded and willing to learn.
Following this particular feature, we'll be talking to Professor E. Ivan Brown from De Montfort University, actually, Self-Styled People's University. And I know Ivan's very keen on the notion that education is for all, no matter what your age happens to be. Is that something which you would also endorse? I mean, as a PhD student at present, is it a case of people listening to this, whatever decade or stage of life they happen to be in, that actually considering the balance of education, entrepreneurship, etc., might well be something they could consider?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's not without its challenges. I don't see many people around the campus who look like me. And
We're too busy working during the PhDs.
Oh.
Time to socialize and
No,
party.
no. I think it can be a challenge, but if you're up for those challenges, then for me, it's been an absolute joy. I mean, there's times where things don't go quite as well, and the literature review is not as awesome as you thought they it would be, and all those sorts of things.
At least it's your literature review. You haven't actually used ChatGPT to write it for you, so that's good.
No. Yeah, I just enjoyed it so much, and I jokingly said to my supervisor, as he was then, that I thought of it as a bit of a pilgrimage, and he said, "Oh, for goodness sake, Maureen, don't tell anybody that." But actually, the further I go along down this road of the PhD, the more I see it in that way. I've learned so much, not just about my subject, but about myself and about, all sorts of things. I feel very blessed to have this opportunity, but it's not open to all. Maybe it should be. But I do think that using your mind, I'm now in my 70s, but using your mind and your brain as you get older is really important. And if we can create opportunities, I can't get a student loan, by the way, because I think you're over 60, you can't get student loans, but I'm lucky that I could afford to do this.
Let's circle back to Beyond Money.
Yep.
Again, how can people actually find out more about Beyond Money? How does it provide advice, etc.? What's the kind of raison d'être of the agency?
Okay, so we have a website now, and that's www.beyondmoney.org.uk. We're still involved in the piloting phase of an online learning program for business owners. If anybody is interested in taking part in that pilot, they can get in touch with me and we can have a chat about that. But yeah, that's where we're at the moment.
Now, I'm intrigued in terms of your musical choice. We often invite our guests on business matters to effectively come up with one, two, or whatever a number they'd like in terms of music or aspects that relate to them. And you take us back to the James Cameron movie Titanic and the composer James Horner. Was that because you're a huge fan of Kate Winslet, or is it something completely different? Was it that Nick DiCaprio chap?
I'm not a huge fan of that film. I mean, I've seen it, like lots of people. My partner is a music lover and will have music playing. And I just heard it one day and it just stopped and listened to it. I'm not somebody, if I'm working or anything like that, I need silence. But this piece of music I found so beautiful. It seemed there was a sort of simplicity about it. And that's, kind of reflects how I live my life, I think. And it just was a joy to listen to. And I think it was the simplicity of it. It's just the piano playing.
Yes, I think it's worth
And
noting that Maureen was specifically explicit when she said not Celine
that.
Dion. So no worry about hearts going on or not from this point of view. It will be the piano version of Rose's theme by James Horner. Is music something that you find an important part of your life, or is it a case of, well, you can take it or leave it?
I suppose I could take it or leave it. I was an avid Rolling Stones fan in my youth. And I'm
And still going,
pleased to
of course.
see, yeah, still they've just got a new LP out, which that's on my Christmas list. No, like a teenager, and you enjoy some music, but I'm not somebody who would go out of my way to listen to music. But I wouldn't be able to pass a book without picking up and looking at it. I'm an avid reader, I suppose.
So it's just briefly addressing the Rolling Stones there. Rolling Stones as opposed to Beatles, has that always been the way?
Yeah, always. Yeah.
Good.
I was smiling because that was the kind of thing when you were at school. Are you a Rolling Stones or a Beatles fan? Yeah, Rolling Stones. I mean, Beatles are okay, but I yeah, it was the Rolling Stones for me.
Folk who have that challenge between Blur or Oasis, or indeed Taylor Swift versus Harry Styles, it's a different league entirely. A different thing entirely. Maureen, it's been terrific connecting with you, good stuff, today. I feel as though we've certainly just scratched the surface in many ways. Your completion, I mean, have you set a completion date for your PhD? Is it the next couple of years or so?
No, it will be in the, I suppose, December 2025. I'm thinking it will be that. But I'm just wondering, what am I going to do then? But there we go. But yeah, I think it'll be December 2025. I've got an idea for the next year or so. Have opportunities that are coming up. So yeah, I think it'll be a busy couple of years, and of course, writing up the thesis.
Absolutely. So we haven't quite got AI to actually do that as yet. Although I'm sure it might be just around the corner, but that's another time for another discussion. Maureen, we've got two final questions to ask you then before we go into this instrumental version of Rose's theme. Firstly, have you had a reasonably interesting and hopefully enjoyable time with us on Business Matters today?
Oh, it's been great. It's been great. The tables turned a little bit because over the last few weeks I've been interviewing entrepreneurs. It's tables turned on me. But yes, it's been great. Thank you.
And just in terms of that research, you may or may not be able to share with us, were there any entrepreneurs that particularly you warmed to or you thought that was fascinating? I mean, again, if you have to hold the names back to protect sources, that's fine. But I was just wondering.
Oh, so many, so many. It truly was a humbling experience listening to people, everyone from a woman who'd had her own experience of domestic abuse and now is involved in a charity producing bags of kit for children if they find themselves having to be in a refuge. There were so many that a guy I interviewed yesterday talking about how he, as business owners, he was encouraged to be very competitive, but has found the greatest business success from working collaboratively with other health service providers. And I've learned so much from each of them. I'm hoping to have the interviews up on the website because I think that they will inspire people when you hear the stories.
Well, I think your own narrative has also proved particularly inspirational, Maureen. So our final question is, can we look forward to connecting with you again? Will you be kind enough to return to either our studios or certainly via Zoom in the not too distant future?
I would love to. I'd love to. So thank you for the invitation and thank you for a great time.
Well, back in the day when I was an undergraduate, I think we were told that there were only 10% of the population who went off to university. And then, of course, we had the openings up in the 1980s, 1990s, etc. And it raised up to 50% of the population. And we see lots of benefits from this. Then, of course, we see a line that actually going to university should be seen as a privilege and you should do something completely different. Well, we're going to address that head on now by actually speaking to a gentleman who is certainly full of experience with respect to obviously the health sector. He was former public health director at Leicester City Council. He's now actually at De Montfort University and will be sharing with us some thoughts on how education is such a vital part of the human experience that should be open to all. We're delighted to welcome to the program Professor Ivan Brown. How are you, Ivan?
I'm very well, thank you, Alex, and thank you very much for inviting me onto the show.
Well, it's great to connect with your good self, and certainly in terms of this university routine, can we actually finally sort of say that university shouldn't be seen as an elite place that only Eton educated people or public school educated people should actually have the rights to go through, and everybody else just basically needs to be lucky to be ruled by them?
Yeah, absolutely, Alex. I think you know, very much. I kind of grew up in the era that a university education was for the elite automatically, and the incredibly gifted, if in terms of the rest of the population.
And again, allowing for that, of course. I mean, I think you just have to look at recent prime ministers to realize that's not necessarily the most gifted of the population. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that it's a chance to really reflect on the process of life and actually develop. Let's go back to the meaning of education, educare, to lead out a person's inner potential. Isn't that surely at the heart of everybody's right to actually have that in operation?
Alex, you have more eloquently than I would have done it. You have taken the words out of my mouth, because I think for me there is a kind of argument, you know, in some of the popular press that kind of indicates that, you know, there are courses and maybe we shouldn't have those courses and we shouldn't. But actually, we're missing the point of education. It is that ability to think, to reflect, to challenge, to process. And everybody, I feel, who wants that should be able to have the right to do that. And it made an inordinate change in my life. I came into education later, after having all of those things that you said before around, or maybe it's not for me. But what I have gained through education has not predominantly been the qualification. It has been an approach to life and an approach to self-reflection that has been so key.
And from your own experience, Ivan, perhaps a bit better share with it, because obviously I alluded to in the intro that you were Director of Public Health at Leicester City Council for the pandemic. So a nice little fun activity from that point of view to work through, really. Was it something that you kind of felt actually in the back of your mind there was a kind of suggestion that, you know, actually maybe, you know, there is a fit here whereby the skill set that I manifested in one aspect of my career can be equally transferred effectively to another element to help others?
Absolutely. It seems like a very, very strange thing to say, but I have, you know, public health running through my bones, you know, over the years. I absolutely feel that my job here within De Montfort University is a public health role, because I have championed over and over again the issue around health inequalities. And driving a huge proportion, a huge swathe of that, is social inequality. The fact that, you know, those that have always had, always have, and those that don't, and they get the worst end, the worst outcome. So for me, having a place like De Montfort University, where, you know, 30% of those students come from backgrounds that had free school meals, which means, you know, the most deprived communities, and they are coming out, and nearly 90% of them are coming out with their degree, is such an important thing. That changes things, that changes futures, and that changes families and communities. So I feel that being able to enhance that in a university that I feel is like a more inclusive people's university is absolutely a step off into, you know, not a change, a step into a different space.
And the benefits are huge. I mean, listening recently to some of the data that we were looking at in Lincolnshire, admittedly, the county slightly north of Leicestershire, etc. But actually, just in terms of life expectancy for people who are actually based around the coastal areas compared with the inner areas of the county and so on. And it's, again, all bound up in this whole notion of social equality. I'm trying to avoid the phrase leveling up because it's been misused in so many times. But is that also one of the ways in which universities can really help their regions?
Definitely, Alex, the point that you made around coastal communities, inner city communities, they have so much in common. I think coastal communities often get forgotten. People seem to think that it's the seaside and it's all fun. Well, actually, it's not if you're living there and you're trying to make a way in the future. And I think that the principles that we apply to complex inner city communities, many of those things around the importance of education, trying to make sure that people have an access and not putting all those blockers in place, are equally applicable to areas such as that. And that starts to make a change for those communities.
I was talking a few moments before this interview with one of my colleagues, and we were discussing the future of higher education and how, in essence, students who are now part of the Generation Alpha setup, born 2010 onwards, will be having completely new learning experiences in the education side of things. How is DMU and arguably other universities as well, how are we looking to accommodate that new vision of the future where maybe the university campus is seen as a place that people visit to socialize and a lot of the learning is done in the virtual world?
See, the wonderful thing about university experiences are they need to be adaptable. We've got, AIs coming on, and people are panicking about what does that mean for
Don't get
education.
me started on ChatGPT, please.
But the reality is that we are going to have to adapt. And I do remember, many years when I did my undergraduate, and we started, I was constantly in the library. Now, I mean, can you imagine? Now, if that book was out, it was out, and I had to wait for it to come back. And now, over the course of later courses, it was at my fingertips. I had to then, the university had to adjust, it had to change. It's like, what is it? And it goes back to the point that you made at the beginning, Alex. What is the importance around education? It is about, critical thinking. It's about, so we can still do that in a changing environment. Universities are not bound by the buildings that they're in. They're bound by the experience in which they confer onto their students. And we have to make sure that we continue to offer something that is meaningful and relevant to the experience that young people and older people actually who come through university will have in their day-to-day lives.
Ivan, I can sense the passion that's emerging from yourself, and that's fantastic news. If you had a few words of advice for either the families of prospective students or indeed prospective students themselves who might be listening to this and thinking, do you know, I might actually take that opportunity. I might actually sort of start exploring my local university and go to Montfort and so on. What advice would you provide?
I think, Alex, the first thing that I would say is don't lock off university. Don't think that it's not for you, first of all. And it took me a long time to get there for myself. And I would encourage others and families to do that. So, parents, you might not have been gone, but if that's still an ambition, your child shares that ambition, do what you can. We can't get away from the fact that money can be a challenge and money can be an issue around that. But it doesn't have to be the be all and end all. There are apprenticeships that allow you to go to university. There are bursaries that allow you to go to university. So try not to lock those things off. And secondly, find a place you're comfortable with. Go to the open days, talk to people that are like you that have been to those universities. Say, actually, this one really worked well for me. Somebody who is born and bred in Lincoln might feel really comfortable being in Lincoln and they go and explore that. Or somebody might say, I want to go down the road, but not too far. And I would recommend you Montfort if you're feeling that way, to be in those. So go to the open days. We have an open day here on the 20th of January. Come along and just get a feel of it and go on the sites. We've got, dmu.ac.uk gives you lots and lots of information about university and university life. Go and explore those things and just don't bolt the door on it because you think, that's not meant to be for me. It should be.
Very much so. And of course, in terms of the takeaway, perhaps realizing that It doesn't matter what age you are, there are always entry points that you can actually develop. In fact, some of the best students I've taught have been the non-standard or mature entry students who've actually had a bit of life experience as well, which is always good. And I think that's a key point as well to bear in mind.
Absolutely, Alex. I was one of those myself. So,
well, there you go. So, details, websites, De Montfort University. Where's the easiest way to actually pop that into your browser and find out more about De Montfort and the People's University?
That's right. So, if you just put in dmu.ac.uk, pop that into your browser and just have a good look around, good search around. And there'll be contacts there if you want to go further. There'll be dates there for you to be able to go and see, and just have a good look virtually at what we have to offer.
I often said open days, certainly at Lincoln, take the tummy test. If it feels good, then it probably is good for yourself. If you feel a little bit uncertain, then choose something else.
There are so many out there. So think about what your priorities are, you know, and you'll find one that fits.
Professor Ivan Brown from De Montfort University, huge thanks. And indeed, let's speak again in the not too distant future.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Alex.
Black Friday, Cyber Monday, online fraud. Yes, the three things can almost be interconnected, as we'll find out with our next feature at the end, of course, of Business Matters. When we were just talking about, of course, AI in business and various other aspects, we now welcome to the programme Fraud Prevention Director at Lloyds Bank. That's Liz Ziegler. How are you, Liz?
Good morning, Alex. Thank you very much for inviting me here today.
Well, it's great to connect with your good self, but not so great is some of the research that Lloyds Bank has actually uncovered in terms of the number of ways in which millions of us might well be at risk because of online fraud. This is not good news.
Well, let's just start by saying, look, do you know what? Anybody, unfortunately, can become a victim of fraud here. And, you know, we like shopping online. It's quite normal. Lots of people, most people, in fact, shop now online here. But particularly at this time of year, in the lead up, well, Black Friday and the lead up to Christmas, we're all after that good bargain, that extra great deal, or perhaps that thing, that toy or that pair of trainers that you just want. You want to give to somebody, or you want it yourself. And you want a good deal, don't you? Or perhaps you want it. It's a hot commodity. It's a hot product, and there's one left. And you think, I've got to make that purchase now. I've got to buy it now. And that's, you're being rushed into it. You're being rushed in and told, you've got to do this. You will lose out. And it's amazing how we, as sensible people, can easily let our guard down when we're being rushed into making a purchase.
I mean, this is the critical thing, because interestingly, the scams are obviously happening on social media as well. That sense of fear of missing out, that sense of urgency that clearly is part of the emotional state that is often, heaven sent to potential fraudsters who actually say, yes, we wish to actually make this decision now. I mean, again, it was standard that the average amount that was lost was around £400, but sometimes you'd have thousands of pounds lost because, you might well have had that absolutely ideal bargain that you see the flat screen TV or whatever you're kind of looking for, and you think it's great. Is it simply a case of, if a deal sounds too good to be true, it probably is? Or is it more sophisticated than that?
Do you know what? If everyone could remember that bit, I think we'd all go a long way together. If it looks too good to be true, it probably is. So use your instincts. You probably know if it looks a bit strange, a bit dodgy. You know, saving £5 or £10 here, we all need to do that. But actually, the fraudsters know that. The criminals know that. They are waiting for you because they know you want that TV. They know you want that Nintendo Switch or whatever it is, that games console you want to buy for your family. And they know that. They're waiting for you. They're waiting for you just to be lured in. And you know what? They've put up a post, a site on one of the Meta platforms on sort of Facebook or Facebook Marketplace. And they've just copied an image and they're waiting for you. They're waiting for you to think, I've got to do this now. I've got to get on with it here. And they make it look really good. It'll probably look pretty professional. They'll ask you to send some money and they'll make it urgent. And my advice is, look, 70% of shopping scams now start on one of the Meta platforms. So that could be Facebook. That could be Instagram. And by the way, those are places that people and we normally are on. Okay, so it's not bad to say you shouldn't be on these platforms, but take care. Like, take care like you would do if you were crossing a road. We all know we have to look before we cross a road. We have to stop and think. And even doing that doesn't necessarily 100% protect you from what happens next, but it'll give you a really good chance of not becoming a victim. So again, it's use that instinct, use that trust, trust in yourself. But also, we've got plenty of ways of checking things out as well these days. We've got reviews, and use multiple reviews. You can even look at the website and say, was it set up yesterday? Was it set up just 2 weeks ago? probably a bit of an indicator that maybe it's not quite as genuine as you think.
Also, despite the fact that you might be invited to use bank transfer, don't use debit or credit cards. Much safer and are likely to actually provide that additional level of security, presumably.
Yes, absolutely. I'd always say use your debit or credit card. Again, it's just a bit harder for a criminal to set up a way of receiving those monies, and it provides you some additional protections here. But look, there are times and a place where you might need to send an online payment or a faster payment. But again, look for the warning indicators. If you're being asked to send money to a bank account that is different to the company you think you're banking with or sending your money to, that should be a red flag. If you're being urged or rushed to do it, that's another red flag. Or if your bank then warns you, it might send you a pop-up message if you're digitally active, or it might send you an SMS. Just be careful, because actually you need to heed those warnings, because the bank is doing some really complex stuff in the background to assess the risk of that transaction and is telling you to be careful, or hang on a second, we're going to decline this transaction. We're really worried about it. Heed that warning. It'll pay off for you in the long run.
One of the, I must admit, irritations I've had in recent years, although I have to say, yes, I can appreciate the importance of it, are the three letters MFA, multi-factor authentication. But that is something where, as you've just alluded to, that actually taking that time to receive the message from your bank to confirm that it's a code you want to proceed with, it can often be a lifesaver in terms of, is this something I really want to proceed with as far as the transaction and not losing your money?
It can be, but also be careful not to give that code out to somebody on the phone who might phone you and say, I'm from Amazon, or I'm from another high street retailer. I'm going to send you a code. You need to read it back to me. Nobody will ever ask you to do that. That code is for you as you make an online purchase. Never give that code to anybody else who's asking you for it.
So in terms of our top five then, Liz, be cautious on social media, avoid deals that look too good to be true, buy from trusted retailers, absolutely essential, even if it looks like Amazon with a sort of double Z in the spelling. Sometimes it is as blatant as that, the challenges are actually made. Use your debit and credit card, and as you rightly said, pay attention to warnings. Would that be pretty much the kind of safety toolbox you'd say needs to be applied to avoid being a victim of fraud over the holiday season?
Absolutely. It is almost as simple as those top five, if you remember those. But if you want some help or some hints and tips, or perhaps an example of what a real life scam actually looks like, do go onto our website, go onto the Lloyds Bank website. And we have a whole section on there all about fraud prevention. And you can see those hints and tips. You can also see some of the latest scams, because we keep that website updated with the latest scams that we're seeing. So you can easily log in, or you can just go online, have a look for those. And hopefully you don't become a victim yourself.
Are you ever kind of shocked by the levels to which folk will actually go, fraudsters will actually go? Is it getting better? Is it getting worse? Or do you think it's never ending? It's, you know, now that we've got AI in the system and ChatGPTs, it's getting even worse.
Well, look, some data that UK Finance published around so the first half of this year here, particularly for purchase scams, were up 43% year on year. And so, yes, there are more fraudsters out there trying ways to get money from you. Now, the overall threat to the to us in the UK here, look, fraud is the most common crime now in the United Kingdom. About 40% of crime is fraud. And therefore, unfortunately, it's a crime that can impact all of us in some way, shape or form here. So we all need to be on our guard. We all need to look out for these things. But actually, with the hints and tips I talked about, we can all help protect ourselves.
Liz Ziegler, Fraud Prevention Director at Lloyds Bank. Huge thanks. Hopefully we'll speak again very soon, and have a great holiday season, Liz.
You too. Thank you, Alex.